I'd like to welcome you back to the third in this series on Ta'amei HaMikra. And just to remind you that for the first Shi'ur, we dealt with the nature of the Ta'amim, the classification of the Ta'amim, how they help us sing, but also how they help us divide up the words, and consequently how they help us interpret the words, with a few examples, and finally with an application of the theory to the theme of different opinions and different shitot within religious Zionism and secular Zionism. The second shiur last week dealt with taking the Ta'amim and into further applications and further explanations, interpretations of various psukim. We promised that this week was going to be an examination of the relationship of various parshanim in their commentaries to the authority of the Ta'amei HaMikra, and God willing, next week will be an examination of when you should correct a Baal Koreh, either because of Ta'amei HaMikra or Diktuk or other types of mistakes. I wanted to preface this with a little P.S. to one of the examples that we've been following through the Shi'ur. I had originally mentioned something that I thought I remembered from Rav Soloveitchik regarding... thank you very much. That is also true. I am grateful to Rabbi Kelman for including me in his star-studded lineup of pre-Pesach Shi'urim. You can't see me. I'm a little bit dark. I'm in a dark background, but I do see my face and Jay's. I don't know what to tell you, Bella. I am even more backward, I think, than most people on this particular technology. So, Mirza Hashem, I look forward to learning on April 9th, I believe it is, a shiur in Parshat the Makot of Mitzrayim. Bella might remember an earlier version of this shiur back from the days of Riverdale, and looking forward to a Chazara shiur. For others, I think it may be new and I hope exciting. So we mentioned how Rav Soloveitchik had one particular example of the Ta'amei HaMikra not deciding. Really, I'm totally absent. Reminds me of the promo on TV that said, "The Invisible Man will not be seen tonight, in order that we may bring you the following special program." So it seems that I'm the Invisible Man tonight. Perhaps it'll be Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay. So, we mentioned that one particular example, Rav Soloveitchik said, was a case of the Ta'amei HaMikra stepping back and being neutral, purposely giving something to be interpreted in both directions. I had thought that it was on the Pasuk of Lefnei Hashem Titharu. From what I now, actually at Bella's home, I had a chance to discuss it on Purim with Rabbi Gold, with Bella's brother, with Rabbi Bella's mechutin, and we came to the conclusion that the example was probably the pasuk of Vayikra b'shem Hashem before the Yud Gimel Midot Harachamim, where it says Vayered Hashem be'anan, Vayityatzei v'mo sham, Vayikra b'shem Hashem. And there are a couple of different ways of translating that. You could say, Vayikra b'shem Hashem, Moshe called in the name of God, and Moshe said, Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun. Or you could say, Vayikra b'shem, he called in the name. Who did? Hashem. Hashem did what he had promised Moshe, Ani a'avir kol tuvi al panecha, V'karati v'shem Hashem lefanecha. I'm going to call in my own name, I'll reveal my name to you. So, which is it? So it's a machloket in the Parshanim. And in this particular case, the ta'amim are neutral, because Vayikra v'shem is a merchat tipcha. So it could be Vayikra v'shem, a pause, who did it? Hashem. Or it could be Vayikra v'shem Hashem, that Moshe called the name of, in God's name. I believe that it was there that Rav Soloveitchik said the ta'amim could be read either way. And now to the topic of this evening. The Parshanim often express their relationship to the Ta'amei HaMikra either by using them, sometimes by explicitly rejecting them, and more often by inexplicitly by rejecting them in a roundabout way by not using them. But they do not ignore the Ta'amei HaMikra, and in fact sometimes they make explicit statements. Terrific. Sometimes they make explicit statements of fidelity, of fealty, of faithfulness to the Ta'amei HaMikra. In fact, if you look in the Talmud, and if you look in the Rishonim, you find that the Ta'amim are ascribed great importance and great antiquity. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah and in Maseches Erevin says that the Ta'amim go way, way back. The Gemara in Megillah and parallel Midrashim apply the Pasuk in Nehemiah Perakhet Pasukhet, Vayikru bit Sefer Torah Ha'elokim Mifolrash V'som Seichel Vayavinu Ba'mikra. So they take at least one of those phrases, V'som Seichel, and they say, Elu HaTa'amim. That's the Yerushalmi. Vayavinu Ba'mikra, Elu Piskei Ta'amim, that's the Bavli. Likewise, the Gemara in Masechet Erevin says that when Kohelet, who is identified with Shlomo HaMelech, limad da'at et ha'am, it's de'agmire b'simanei ta'amim, that he taught them the ta'amei ha'mikra to the psukim that he was teaching them. In Megillah, it is in the Bavli on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Sorry, that's in the Yerushalmi. In the Bavli, it's Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Okay, and the Gemara in Erevin is Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Bet. I should say at this point that my wisdom, such as it is on this subject, is derived to a very great extent from a remarkable sefer called HaMikra Bein Ta'amim L'Parshanut by Simcha Kogut, and it is published by Magnus Press of Hebrew University, and, well, it looks square, as you can see from here. You can't see it too explicitly. It is a wonderful sefer. If you like this, I cannot possibly cover everything that he does here. I'm going to be giving you a representative sampling. So according to those limudim, the Ta'amei HaMikra go back to the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, or perhaps Shlomo HaMelech. And in fact, you find an even more radical approach, even an approach in one of the Talmidim of Rashi, Rabbi Simcha of Vitri, the Machzor Vitri, who says that it goes back already to Sinai. This is a quotation from the Machzor Vitri, Sheta'amei l'neginot heim she'ne'emru l'moshe, mitolesh u'mizokef, u'miyoshev u'miomeid, u'mihaole u'mihayored u'mihamunach. Aval simanei haneginot, the notation, however, sofrim hu shetiknum. That already is later, that is rabbinic. Umipnei shehata'amim vahaneginot mishtakhin hu shetiknum. That's in order to preserve it, because it's easy to forget if you don't have a notation. just a modern day parallel is the development of notation for dance. The choreographers have, and not too many people know the how to notate exact motions in dance for the choreography. But apparently that is an art that is growing somewhat nowadays, and many of the dances that are famous are being put down in notation. So, lahavdil. So, the very fact, whether you take it literally or not, that something goes all the way back to Sinai, that someone would say that it goes all the way to Sinai, shows how important it was taken to be. Now, once you get past that, you actually have explicit declarations. Oh, I'm sorry. Kogut is in Hebrew Kuf Vav Gimel Vav Tet, and in English K-O-G-U-T, Kogut. Sometimes you have explicit declarations by Rishonim, by classical medieval exegetes, of their reliance on the Ta'amim. The Ibn Ezra is pretty famous in this category. The Ibn Ezra writes in one of his lesser known Sfarim, Mozne Lishon HaKodesh, or Mozne Lishon HaKodesh. He writes, Adhircha Shetelech Acharei Ba'alei HaTa'amim. I must warn you to follow the authors of the Ta'amim. V'chol Perush She'eno Alpi HaTa'amim Lo Tovelo V'lo Tishma'ilav. And any Pirush that doesn't follow them, you should not follow, you should not hearken to. That's the language that's describing a mesis. Somebody who's trying to get you to do Avodah Zarah, it says, Lo Tovelo V'lo Tishma'ilav. So the language is borrowed for somebody who is trying to lead you to follow a Pirush that is not in accordance with the Ta'amim. Oh, you bet. Just because somebody says that you have to follow the Ta'amim is no guarantee that he himself does not diverge from them on occasion. And we will get to that. I don't know if we'll have a specific example from Ibn Ezra today, but you certainly can find such examples by the, not the carload, but by, if not by the bushel, by the peck in this sefer. That doesn't mean that in general he doesn't hold that they are very important, and this isn't the only place where he makes such a statement, but I don't need to belabor the issue. In fact, the Ibn Ezra on a very famous pasuk rejects the interpretation of Rav Sadia Gaon because he says that it doesn't follow the Ta'amei HaMikra. On the pasuk right next to the one I quoted regarding Rav Soloveitchik, Vayavor Hashem al panav vayikra, Hashem Hashem kel rachum b'chanun. So, Hashem's name is repeated here twice, Hashem Hashem, for the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim. But there is a great amount of discussion as to exactly which words constitute the 13 attributes of God's mercy, and there are about 15 shitot on that. I have a sefer at home which lays them all out. And in fact, the Mekubalim say that Hashem Hashem doesn't count at all. They start with Kel, Rachum, V'chanun. And they have a whole shita based on that. Some start, Rav Sadia, we sing in shul, Adoshem, Adoshem, Kel, Rachum, V'chanun. So we consider both Hashems to be Midot HaRachamim. And we remember the Gemara that says that one of them was before a person sins, and the other one is after the person sins. Hashem Kodem Achet, Hashem Liachar Achet, it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Rav Sa'adya Gaon says that it should be Vayavor Hashem Al Panav, Vayikra Hashem. That Hashem called out, Hashem Kel Rachum V'chanun. And that the first one is not part of the Midot. Ibn Ezra disagrees with that because he holds that that's against the Ta'amei HaMikra. And here is the citation from Ibn Ezra. Amar HaGaon, Rav Sadia said, Ki Hashem Harishon Davekim Vayikra. That the first name of God is connected to the verb Vayikra. It's Vayikra Hashem. Virakacha, and only after that does the exact quotation begin. But then the Ibn Ezra objects. He says, V'ilu hayakein, lama lo dibko ba'al ha-ta'amim. If that were the case, why didn't the author of the ta'amim connect the words Vayikra Hashem? The ta'amim read, Vayavor Hashem al-panav Vayikra Hashem Hashem kel rachum v'chanun. That's the reading for many occasions, including ta'anit tzibur. And so Hashem Hashem is together not Vayikra Hashem. V'hanachon, and therefore Ibn Ezra says the correct interpretation is Ki Hashem Shtei Pa'amim. It's twice in the Midos the name of God, Kimo Avraham Avraham. Like when God calls Abraham, repeating his name. So that so far does the Ibn Ezra follow the Ta'amim, that he rejects the Perush of Rav Sadia Gaon that does not accord with the Ta'amim. Let's move a little bit to Rashi. Rashi is extremely conscious of the Ta'amei HaMikra. He will mention them at many places in his Perush. He will explain Psukim based upon them. And he will even say on occasion that you have to say this Perush rather than that one because of the Ta'amim. One Perush comes to my mind, which actually may make a difference in meaning, although, as we'll discuss next week, I don't think you would repeat because of this if you made the mistake. And it goes back to a tikkun l'korim that many of us grew up with. Back in the days before there was even the Koran Tanakh, or Tikkun, before there was the Tikkun Simanim, before there were certainly the popularity of the Keter Aram Tzova, the Aleppo Codex, we all grew up with a Tikkun, with a plain, dark, blue cover, which was the Sharfstein Tikkun. It was by from Sharfstein Publishing House, and it was a no-frills, but that was all we had. And it became a lot of fun to look through there and find mistakes. One of the interesting things about that tikkun is that it was taken from a Pasul Sefer Torah. If you go to the Rishon in Vayakel, you discover that the Torah there had an extra vav in the Rishon of Vayakel. I don't know exactly, I'm not paskening on the Torah, but you pick up these things over years of looking at the Parshiyot. But in the easy side, not the Torah side, in the Chumash side of the Tikkun, in Parshat Noach, it says that Noach took to the Teva all types of creatures and all types of birds, and it says, Kol Tzipor, Kol Kanav, every bird, every winged creature. But then, if you look in Rashi, he makes it clear that it should really read Kol Tzipor, Kol Kanaf, that there should be a Tipcha just on Kol, and then Tzipor is a Mercha, and Kol Kanaf is the Sof Pasuk. And he says that it is from that combination of Ta'amim that a Drasha comes, that any creature of any type of wing was taken into the Teva, and that includes chagavim. It includes grasshoppers as well. It includes insects with wings. And that is only possible if you're reading it that way and not kol tzipor, kol kanaf. So I do not think again that you would repeat, but it is one of the examples where Rashi is very serious about the Ta'amei HaMikra. Another one. There is a pasuk in Tehillim, Perek Ayin Gimel, pasuk Kaf Dalet, that says, Ba'atzatcha Tanchei, you guide me with your advice, Ve'achar Tavod tikacheni. V'achar kavod tikacheni. And over there, it's not exactly clear how you would translate that. So here's what Rashi writes. Ilu haya ta'am mafsik al kavod, if the ta'am was on the word kavod, the pause were on kavod, haya pitrono, then it would mean liachar shehishlamta l'sancheirev kol ha-kavod, after you give everything to Sancheirev, the king of Assyria, titacheni elecha, then you would take me to you. That would be v'achar kavod tikacheni, if there were a tipcha on the word kavod. Hifleita nisecha liYisrael ve'achravta et Sancheirev. That would be the interpretation were it written with a ta'am hamafzik on kavod, but it's not. Kavod has a mercha. Now this is ta'am me'emet. So v'achar has a ta'am that we're not accustomed to, but kavod is not a mafzik, it's a mechaber. So he says, achshav shehata'am al v'achar, since the pause is on v'achar, and kavod tikacheni is together, ze pitrono, it must mean the following, v'acharei chen l'chavod tikacheni, and after all that, you will take me to honor, to kavod. Mishachtani elecha l'kavod u'l'tefaret, you've drawn me to you for honor and glory. So basically, Rashi is saying, I'm aware that there are two ways of translating this pasuk, and both of them seem valid, but one of them accords with the Ta'amei HaMikra, and one of them does not, so I'm going to choose the one that accords with the Ta'amei HaMikra. Likewise, Rashi expresses his great connection to the Ta'amei HaMikra on a pasuk in a very difficult section of Tanakh, the first perek of Sefer Yechezkel, the vision of God's chariot, Ma'asei Merkava. It's the Haftorah on Shavuos morning. I often think that we say it on Shavuos morning because after staying up all night, we're asleep anyway, and we wouldn't understand it any better awake, so we might as well read it when we're half asleep. The art scroll on every page of their interpretation of the Ma'asei Merkava write a disclaimer that basically says, we don't know what we're talking about, but we kind of have to fill up this page with ink. Well, we're not claiming to really know what we're saying, but here goes anyway. So there is the pasuk, in Yechezkel Perek Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Ufnehem, which is a zakef gadol, v'chanfehem prudot milmala, and their wings were separated above. And Rashi says, thank goodness for Ta'amei HaMikra. He says, Il Malaysia Ra'iti Ta'am Zakef Gadol Nakud Al Ufnehem Lo Hayiti Yodea Lefarsho. Had I not seen the Zakef Gadol on the first word, Ufnehem, I would never have known how to explain this. I might have read, for example, Ufnehem Bechafehem Prudot Milamala. But now that I have Ufnehem separate, I can explain it. Aval ha-nikud. Nikud here doesn't mean the vocalization. It means the ta'amim. Ha-nikud limdani lahavdilam zu mizu. It taught me to separate the phrases. Ula-ha-amid tevat ufnehem b'fnei asma. And to keep that first word by itself. V'chein perusho. Ufnehem lahem. And they had their faces. And their wings were separate above their faces. And he says later on in the same perek, you have the same thing. It says, Vigabehen, with a pashta zakef katon on it. Was that, if my eyesight is good here? Vigova lahem, vir alahem. Where you have the same thing, a word at the beginning, which is kept separate. all of this is Rashi depending very, very carefully on the Ta'amei HaMikra. And Professor Kogut says, Rashi sometimes is so devoted to the Ta'amei HaMikra that he sometimes, on rare occasions, follows them in error. Or so Kogut claims. And he says, one example of that is a pasuk regarding Sodom. When God tells Abraham, I'm going to go down and see if they're really doing everything that it seems like they're doing. Er dana ve'er'eh, haketza'akata haba'a elai asu kala. Now that's a very tough pasuk. What could it possibly mean? Well, tsa'akata means the cry of the city. In the Midrash, of course, it means the cry of the girl who was caught giving food to a poor person, and then they spread honey on her, and they left her for the bees, and she cried out, but that's Midrash. The Rashi quotes that Midrash, because it's a feminine, tsa'akata. But the simple pshat is that tsa'akata goes on the city. If the cry of the city, Haba'a Elai, which is coming up to me from Sodom, Asu Kala. So you could say that Asu Kala, as some of the Farshim say, means if they all did it, well then I'll punish them. Or Asu Kala, if they did it totally, that Kala would be an adverb. In both of those cases, kala is used as an adverb modifying the verb asu. Or you could say asu kala means asu kulam. I think it was, all right, all of them, totally. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says, if they did it, asu, and they remain obdurate in their way of evil, well then, kala ani oseh bahem. I will destroy them totally. I believe that Rabbi Jay remembers that this was one of the psukim that we analyzed in Chama Leibowitz's class together for the Parshanim, not so much for the Ta'amei HaMikra, but for the Parshanim. And Rashi says, if the cry that they did asu, and they are still in their omdim bimirdam, well then, kala ani oseh bahem, I will bring total destruction upon them. And then Rashi adds, ulefichach yesh hepseik nikudat paseik bein asu lekala. That's why the Ta'amei HaMikra pause between Asu and Kala. Because if it were that they did it totally or all of them did, then Asu Kala should be together. But since it is if they did it and are still doing it, then Kala, Asu and Kala are separated by the Ta'amim. Says Kogut, it's not true. And he says, Shadal, Shmuel David Lutzato, already pointed this out. Because the Ta'amei HaMikra do not make a pause there. The Ta'amei HaMikra are, Haketza'akata, Haba'a Elai Asu, Kala. The Asu is a Munach. It's not even a Munach Ligarme, it's a Munach that connects totally. And therefore, he says that Rashi, citing the Ta'amim, was depending upon them when they don't even do what he says they did. I'm wondering whether what Rashi meant was that between Asu and Kala, there is a psik, a vertical line, a psik, which also tells you to pause. I do not know about origins of psik and so forth, offhand, but maybe that's what Rashi meant, not that the munach stops you, but that the psik does. In any event, Rashi clearly is very connected into the Ta'amei HaMikra, which, as we'll see, does not necessarily mean that he will always follow them. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, is also certainly aware and certainly often in agreement with the Ta'amei HaMikra. And one interesting example is in the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yehuda. He says, Yehuda, ta yoducha achecha, yadcha bi'orfo yivecha, yishtachavu lecha b'nei imecha, gur aryeh Yehuda, you are a young lion, miteref b'ni alita. Miteref b'ni alita. There are two ways of translating that. One is, from the teref, from the ripping apart of my son, you rose, you elevated yourself. The other way is, from teref, from ripping apart, comma, my son, Yehuda, you rose up. Now, according to the first one, incidentally, it comes out that Yaakov was explicitly saying, Yehuda, you separated yourself from the ripping apart, the tarof toraf Yosef, the ripping apart, the crime of trying to kill and ultimately selling my son. Or at least you stopped him from being killed. According to that, Yaakov was aware of exactly what the brothers had done to Yosef. That's not really made clear elsewhere in the Chumash. But if you say, Miteref Bini, if Bini is parenthetical, and it's referring to Yehuda, then it's not necessarily saying that Yaakov was aware of what the brothers had done to Yosef. The Rashbam says that it has to be the second version, because of the Ta'amei HaMikra. Because the Ta'amei HaMikra are Miteref Bini Alita, it's Tibcha Munach Etnachta. Had it been from the Teref of Yosef, it should have been Miteref Bini Alita, it should have been Mercha Tibcha Etnachta. And so the Rashbam points out the possibility of doing it one way and says that it cannot be done that way. He says, the Hamifarsho b'mechirat Yosef, one who says that it's talking about the sale of Yosef, and Yaakov was aware of it, lo yada b'shita shel pasuk v'lo b'chiluk ta'amim klal, doesn't know how to read the pasuk and doesn't know how the ta'amim divide it up. So that's the Rashbam, who is accepting the Ta'amim as authoritative in this pasuk. Now that we've seen all of those people who vote with the Ta'amim, who come down in favor of the Ta'amim, it's important to see that sometimes there are those who don't. Usually when they don't, they don't come right out and say it. And you have to examine the Ta'amim and examine the Perushim and see when the Perushim just don't fit the Ta'amim, and then you know that they disagree, but they're not going to explicitly do it. They don't want to have such chutzpah. They don't want to lower the prestige of the Ta'amim. But occasionally you will find a Mefaresh, a Rishon, a Parshan, who comes right out and says it. And I'm going to give you two examples of that, first from a Radak, and then from a Chizkuni. The Radak, on a Pasuk in Hosea, Perek Yudbet, Pasuk Yudbet, the Pasuk says, Im Gilad Aven Achshav Hayu, Bigilgal Shvarim Zibechu. And the question is, the phrase Ach Shav Hayu, does it relate to what came before or to what comes after? According to the Ta'amim, it should be read as follows: Im Gilad Aven Ach Shav Hayu. It goes to what came before. V'Gilgal Shvarim Zibechu. That's how it should be according to the Ta'amei HaMikra. And originally, that is how the Radak explains it. But then, he verges away from that. And he says that you should really connect it to what comes later, against the Ta'amim. He says, Achshav hayu b'Gilgal. And he writes, V'af al pi shahazakef b'milat hayu. Even though there's a zakef katon on hayu, which should tell you to stop and not to connect it to the next word, b'Gilgal. Ein kol ta'amei ha-perushim holchim acharei ta'amei ha-nikud. Not all interpretations have to follow the ta'amei ha-mikra. Ein kol ta'amei ha-perushim holchim acharei ta'amei ha-nikud. That's the Radak. And now in a pasuk that you're much more familiar with, the Chizkuni takes a pasuk that is said by Paro to Yosef when Yosef's family is coming to Mitzrayim. The pasuk is Bimeitav, Eretz Mitzrayim lefanechahi, the land of Mitzrayim is before you to do as you please. Bimeitav haaretz, here's how the ta'amim go. Bimeitav haaretz Hoshev et avicha v'et achecha. In the best part of the land, give your father and your brothers to dwell. Yeshavu be'eretz Goshen. They should dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know that you have anshei chayil among them, you should appoint them over my flocks. The Chizkuni says, b'meitav v'aretz hoshev et achecha. Et avicha. Have your father dwell in the best part of the land. Ki hu zaken, ve'eino mevakesh rak minucha ve'avir tov. Because he's an older gentleman. He just wants to rest and have good air to breathe. So he should be b'meitav ha'aretz. Aval achecha, bachurim, yeshivu be'eretz Goshen, eretz mekom mir'eh. But your brothers who are young and strong and they are shepherds, have them live in Goshen, which is a land of pasture. So what he is doing is, b'meitav ha'aretz hoshev et avicha, v'et achecha, yeshvu be'eretz Goshen. That's against the ta'amei ha-mikra. The etnachta is on v'et achecha. And he is ignoring that, and he's aware of the fact that he is ignoring it. And he writes, V'al tishiveni min ha'etnachta lomar shehi mafseket. Don't attack me by telling me that the etnachta is a stop. Shaharei dugmato matzinu, because I can give you another pasuk in Shirat Devorah that says, Zivulun am chireif nafsho lamut v'naftali al meromei sadeh, where v'naftali has an etnachta. But it really has to be connected to the second half of the pasuk, v'naftali al meromei sadeh, even though it sounds like it was the end of the first half. So both the Radak and the Chizkuni say explicitly that there can be times when the correct interpretation goes against the Ta'amei HaMikra. For the time remaining to us, I'd like to give you a few examples of such cases where the Mefarshim, different Mefarshim, go against the Ta'amei HaMikra, but they don't say so explicitly. They just do it. And it's up to us to figure out why they do it. There are many grounds on which they might do it. They might find that, grammatically speaking, there is a better interpretation in their opinion than that which is suggested by the Ta'amim. They might have a theological problem with that which is suggested by the Ta'amim. They might find that the Ta'amim go against the Targum, and they may prefer prefer to follow the interpretation of the Targum. So let's just take a look at a few of these. Here's one that is a theological issue. The Haftorah for Parshas Yisro, Sefer Yeshayahu, Perek Vav, what is assumed to be the first vision of Yeshayahu, that we get, excuse me, part of Kedusha from, where he sees God and his throne, and he sees the angels surrounding God. And it says, Seraphim Omedim Mima'al Lo. That's not the only way that it could have said it. It could have said, Seraphim Omedim Mima'al Lo. What's the difference? So had it said, Ma'pach Pashta Munach Zakeith Katon, Seraphim Omedim Mima'al Lo. The interpretation would have been that the angels were standing above God. And it is not theologically comfortable to say that there is something that is above God. And therefore, the Tamei HaMikra instead support an interpretation that they were serving God, they were for God, like Abraham standing over the angels to serve them, who omeid aleihem tachat ha'etz. And that's why it says, Seraphim omdim mima'al, they were standing above, lo, for God, but not above God. That's one example of Ta'amei HaMikra that do not want a particular interpretation because of theological reasons. Now the Rashbam on that pasuk does not think that he necessarily has to follow that interpretation. He assumes that the pasuk is saying that someone was as if describing someone sitting and someone standing. He did not feel that necessarily he had to adhere to the Perush of the Ta'amei HaMikra when it was motivated by this theological issue. He writes, Kishe'ish Yoshev V'acher Omeid Korehu Omeid Alav V'chein Ra'iti Et Hashem Yoshev Al Kisei The Gomer, Seraphim Omdim Mima'al Lo. When he explains the Pasuk in Bereshit about Abraham and the angels, he says that when one person is sitting and another one is standing over him, this is the way it's described, and he gives our Pasuk as an example to prove it. So he has no problem with describing it as if they were describing the relative positions of the angels and God. Now, there is another example. You see, the Rashbam is not troubled by certain things that other Mefarshim might be troubled by. The Rashbam is also the ultimate Pashtan. He is not the one to follow Midrashim, where many Mefarshim often would. And so sometimes, if he feels that a Midrash, that a Perush based on the Ta'amim, is really pushing a Midrashic interpretation, he may disagree with it. And one such example is in the Pasuk in Vayosha, right before Shirat Hayam, where it says, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim Meit al Sfat Hayam. The Ta'amim go in that phraseology, which the fancy way would be, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim Meit al Sfat Hayam. Now that grouping really begs one to remember a midrash. The midrash says that the Jews were afraid that maybe just as we're coming out of Yam Suf on this side, maybe the Egyptians are coming out of Yam Suf on another side. And maybe they're still alive and they'll still chase us and they'll still enslave us. And therefore God had the sea spit the Egyptians out so that they would be lying dead al Sfat Hayam. And this seems to be what the Ta'amim are hinting at. Vayar Yisrael at Mitzrayim, they saw them, and what position were the Mitzrim in when they saw them? They were Meit al Sfat Hayam, they were dead, lying dead, having been expelled by the sea. The Rashbam doesn't like that. The Rashbam interprets the Pasuk as if it said, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim Meit al Sfat Hayam. And he explains, Kishahayu Yisrael al Sfat Hayam, Ra'u miyad et Hayam shav al Pnei HaMitzrim, Vitav'u Betocho, Zehu Ikar Pshuto. He says that it's as if it said that the Jews who were al Sfat Hayam saw the Mitzrim die. They saw the water go back over the Mitzrim. Not that they saw the bodies of the Mitzrim, that the bodies were ejected. No, none of that. Al Sfat Hayam does not refer to the bodies of the Egyptians. It refers to the position of the Jews when they saw the Egyptians ostensibly drowned because the water came back over them. Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim meit. Yisrael saw the Mitzrim die because the water passed over them. And where were Yisrael at the time? Al Sfat Hayam. So the Rashbam here appears to be rejecting the Perush that is supported by the Ta'amei HaMikra, because it is one that is pushing a Midrash, and the Rashbam sees no reason to resort to the Midrash. And he is aware of the other interpretation. You can tell that from the fact that he says, Zehu Ikar Pshuto. This is the real Pashat Pshat, the real Pshuto Shel Mikra, because that means it comes to exclude something else which others say that really isn't Pshuto. I think we have time for one more. There are some really interesting ones. I'm going to take a look at one where Rashi rejects not only the Ta'amim, but also the Targum. And that is a pasuk that Avraham said when he was trying to explain to Avimelech why he passed Sarah off as his sister. He says to Avimelech, Vayihi ka'asher hit'u oti Elokim mi beit avi, va'omar la ze chasdeich asher ta'asi imadi. The first part of the pasuk, when something happened, ka'asher hit'u oti Elokim mi beit avi, I said to Sarah, this is the kindness that you can do for me. Everywhere you go, tell people that you are my sister. And the Ta'amei HaMikra are as follows. Vayehi ka'asher hit'u oti Elokim mi beit avi. That's how it goes. The phrase Elokim mi beit avi is kept separate. Now, there are two problems occurring simultaneously in this pasuk that all of the Mefarshim and the Targum have to deal with. Problem number one is that the word Elokim is here in the plural. It's here in the plural, and usually Elokim, referring to God, is in the singular. And therefore, one possible problem is this saying that Avraham is referring to a pantheon of gods? God forbid. Avraham, the founder of monotheism? So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that if it's describing God, Avraham is saying about God, Ka'asher hit'u oti. Now granted, hit'u is spelled with a taf, not a tet. But sometimes hit'u with a tet and with a taf, if you go into it enough, sometimes they can be interchangeable. If you see them as interchangeable. If it's not, this may not be a problem. Because with a taf it can mean to wander. But with a tet, from ta'ut, it means to mislead. And then it would be, if it's referring to God, ka'asher hit'u oti alokim, when God misled me, caused me to err, attributing a negative action to God. So two problems. God in the plural, and God causing me to make a mistake. So these mistakes are dealt with in different ways by different mifarshim. For example, the Ta'amim, by separating Elokim mibeit avi as a separate pasuk, a separate phrase, says that it's not talking about Hashem. It's talking about the gods of my father's house. My father is Terach. And therefore, the word Elokim is really Elohim. It's chol and not kodesh. So the Ta'amim are saying, when the gods of my father's house, Terach, when the false gods misled me, well, then this happened. However you work out the logic of the Pasuk, it's not referring to God. And the Ta'amim achieve that by separating as an independent phrase, Elohim mibeit avi. Makes a big difference whether a Shem is Kodesh or Chol. Unklus goes even further than the Ta'amei HaMikra. Unklus writes, Vahava kad ta'u amemaya batar ovdei yidehon. When the nations erred, E-R-R-E-D, after the work of their hands, meaning they worshipped Avodah Zarah, viyati kariv Hashem Ligdachalte mi beit Abba, and God brought me near to his service from the house of my father. What is he doing? The Targum says it's as if it said, Vayhi ka'asher hit'u. It's as if it said, when the nations made a mistake, when they followed idols, as if it said, ka'asher ta'u. And then they take the word oti, and against the Ta'amim, and make it as if it were the object of an unspoken verb, the subject of which is Elokim in the next phrase. Oti kirev Elokim. God brought me near to his service, mi beit Abba. Solving the problem by adding an unmentioned verb, and joining words that the Ta'amim have certainly split. This is quite a stretch. Now the issue of whether the word Elokim is Kodesh or Chol, Oklus is saying that it's Kodesh. God brought me near. The Ta'amim are assuming that it's Chol. We already have in Masechet Sofrim a discussion of which names Elokim that are written regarding Abraham are Kodesh and which are Chol. And it's really a machloket there. In Masechet Sofrim, Perek Dalid, Halacha Vav. Rashi does not accept the Ta'amei HaMikra, even though he often refers to them and is very respectful to them. He does not accept that here. Doesn't think that that makes sense. He does not accept the Targum either. He writes, Kasher hit uoti, Unkulus tirgame mashet tirgame. Unkulus said whatever he said. In other words, but I disagree. V'yesh liyashvo od davar davur al ofnav. But you can still explain it in a way where everything fits in a way that is contextually sound. Kishahotziani hakadosh baruch hu mibeit avi lihiyot mishotet v'nad mimakom limakom. When God took me out of the house of my father to be wandering from place to place. So it's as if he is reading Ka'asher hit u'oti Elohim, not like the Ta'amim, which has Elohim mi Beit Avi separate. He puts Elohim as the subject of the verb hit u. He's not troubled by the fact that Elohim is plural, because you do find that sometimes that God's name Elohim is used in the plural. And he is not troubled by it, ooh, that God made me do a mistake, because he understands it to mean God made me wander. Like the pasuk at the end of Tehillim Kuf Yutet, Ta'iti kise oved. Ta'iti with a tuff. I'm wandering like a lost sheep. Bakesh avdecha, seek me out. So when God made me wander, mi beit avi, from my father's house, so I told Sarah, pass yourself off as my sister. These are just a few of the examples of the many. This is an entire book of such examples. But the bottom line is that Tamei HaMikra are taken extremely seriously and given very ancient vintage by the Parshanim of the Yemei HaBeinayim of the Middle Ages. But that does not mean that they give the Ta'amim a veto on their own Perushim. Different Parshanim have different criteria for what, when or why they will reject a Perush of the Ta'amim. It might be because that Perush creates a theological problem, or because it addresses one that they think doesn't need addressing. It might be because it is against something that the Targum says. Or it might be because they think they have a better grammatical sense than the Ta'amim are doing right here. There can be many reasons, and those reasons are spelled out in great detail among the examples in Professor Kogut's work. Let's see. In MS Liyakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky does indeed have beautiful interpretations connected to the Ta'amim. I'm straining myself now to think of other people who do today. The only one that I don't know that he does, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rav David Cohen from Gvul Yavetz in Brooklyn, in his Sfarim, which usually have the word Yavetz in their title, I wouldn't be surprised if he has some of this type of thing. I am not offhand familiar with other people who are doing it in extensively today. I would love, if anybody knows of such people, to let me know as well. It was a pleasant surprise to find Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky being so interested in it. I don't know enough about Rav Yaakov to tell you why he was so interested in it. My impression is that he was the sort of person, I could be off, that believed in mastering a system from the ground up. The entire thing, looking at the totality of something, and that he went back to the basics. I mean, I could be off base over here, but just from what I've heard from people and a little bit of what I've read, that's my impression. I think it's a wonderful thing, so I assume that he would forgive me for saying it, even if I'm wrong. So, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, next week, in the same time slot, We will be doing the issue of correcting a Baal Koreh and when it's required. Most people correct when it's not necessary and often don't correct when it is necessary. And they remember that you're supposed to correct when there's a change in the meaning of the word, but they're not so clear on when the word's meaning really changes. And sometimes the word's meaning may change, and yet the poskim of our time say that it's not necessary to correct. What I will do, hopefully, is summarize the issues involved as best as I can, and then, for those who are interested in more, send you a copy of the article that I've just completed on the subject in its pre-publication state for anybody who's interested. And then, Amir Tzashem, in 2 weeks, I'll be honored to be part of a wonderful lineup of pre-Pesach shiurim, and the shiur will be on the theme of the Eser Makot, some patterns that you may not have ever come across, even if you have seen a good deal on the Makot. I thank you all so much for coming, and Amir Tzashem, for those of you who live in New York, or are going to be near New York on April 4th, 5th, 6th, and are interested in this sort of thing, use this as an opportunity to plug a wonderful program at our shul, Congregation Eitz Chaim of Kew Gardens Hills, where we're going to have Rav Amnon Bazak of Yeshivat Har Etzion for Shabbat. And then, in addition to what he'll do on Shabbat, on Sunday, he will be having a Yom Iyun together with Rav David Silber and on Sefer Shmuel. In the morning, Rav Bazak will analyze Perek Aleph of Shmuel Aleph, and Rav Silber will be doing the last Perek of Shmuel Bet. And then in the afternoon, they'll be having a roundtable discussion on Chapter 15 of Shmuel Aleph, Shaul and Amalek, and how it serves as a key to many of the themes in the entire Sefer. Thank you for letting me advertise that, and I wish you all a wonderful week and a wonderful Shabbos, and I hope your Purim was well, and Amir Tzashem, I hope to learn with you once more next week.